Hey there, welcome to Journeys of Empowerment, the podcast that's on a mission to spark agency in each and every one of us. I'm your host, Michiel Soetjiet-Rijt, and in this show, we'll be diving into real-life stories, personal challenges, and incredible transformations with inspiring role models for social impact. Whether you're navigating on your own journey or helping others on theirs, this space is for you. But before we dive in, I'd like to take a moment to thank our first sponsor, Neotopia, for believing in our mission. Neotopia empowers leaders, both formal and informal, to influence positive behavior change through proven organizational behavior management. Their training and coaching help teams create lasting culture shifts and drive performance with positive reinforcement. For more info, check them out at neotopia.nl. Today we're joined by an exceptional guest, Yasmina Kababi. Yasmina is the founder of Fresh Table, a social impact catering company that is redefining both sustainability and inclusion. Through Fresh Table, Yasmina is creating life-changing opportunities for highly skilled former refugees while promoting sustainable practices with every meal. Her mission is to change the world meal by meal, proving that we all can do good while enjoying delicious fresh food. We'll dive deep into her inspiring journey, how she's not only championing social inclusion, but also leading a zero-waste, innovative food movement that is impacting organizations and communities alike. Yasmina's story is a powerful testament to the impact of empowering others. Let's explore the lessons she's learned and how her work is sparking real change for a more inclusive and sustainable future. Hi, Yasmina, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much.
What do you think of the intro?
The introduction is so amazing. I want to put this as my voicemail.
Oh, great, great. We will do that. I will send you the recording.
I'll decline every call so people can just listen to this.
Yeah. Great, great, great. And we had a small talk before we started the conversation. And my question was, when did we meet for the first time? That was at the DNL event in Amsterdam at the Rabobank, right? And the second time, and that was the first time. And then the second time was at the DNL cohort event where your Fresh Table was presenting amazing food.
Thank you.
There, the love started already because, yeah, amazing, amazing.
Thank you so much.
The taste and also the presentation. And then at the amazing OMEC event.
Yeah.
And there it was meant to be.
Like, third time is a charm.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. So for people who don't know Fresh Table, tell the story because it's an amazing story, but it's up to you to share it with us.
There's so much to tell. But I'll start simple. So what is Fresh Table? That's a bit easier to follow the story. Fresh Table is an impact catering company, and that means that we offer catering to corporates and governmental institutions, but we do that in an impactful way. So we mostly work with people with migration background, predominantly former refugees, and we hire them based on their skills, and we focus on zero waste in the food chain. And we do that all with delicious international food.
Beautiful, beautiful. And it sounds like a mission.
Yeah.
It sounds like a calling. And what's the mission behind it?
So the mission behind it, I should go back to a little bit more of a personal story because I'm very mission driven. So I always tell people that I was very lucky when I was 19. I figured out what my mission was. And I realized at some point, actually my mission is to still in life, I'm 29 right now at the moment of recording. And I figured out that every person that I meet and every place that I visit, I want to leave it behind a little bit better than before I found it. And it hasn't changed one bit. Right now, I'm doing that as an entrepreneur. Tomorrow, I might do that as a cleaning lady or as a truck driver. I don't care. I'm so mission-driven that it, at some point, it just becomes bigger than you. So the mission behind it is, in the essence, still leaving every person a little bit better behind than how we found it. And that goes from our employees to our customers, to the people that taste the food, But also to the planet and everything that we leave behind in that essence. Mm.
Beautiful. And what sparked that mission? Because at 19, you were in the luxury position to find your mission, right? Mm-hmm. 19 and already having a mission in life.
I didn't realize it back then. I thought it was normal. But then right now, I'm 29. I'm talking to a lot of people that are over 50. And they're like, I'm still looking for, I'm just lost. I have everything. I have the money, I have the family, I have the wife or the husband and the cars. I'm missing that mission. I'm like, oh, really? So it's not normal to already have found that. So now I realize how super lucky and blessed I was to be aware of that mission. I think the mission in life for a lot of people, not just for me, but I want everybody to get the gist of it, is that we already all have a mission in life. It's just going back to the essence of the true self in you to find that mission. Mm. It's not something new that you have to discover or like watch millions of YouTube videos and pay gurus to tell you. It's inside of you. You just have to discover what's inside of that. So at 19, I had that realization, but the mission has always been there along my childhood. It's how I got raised. It's how I was taught by my mom and by my sisters and by my family, my grandparents. We're always taught to care and to love. I didn't grow up in a rich family, not at all. But we always knew that there's always an extra space for somebody at the table. Mm-hmm. Even if you have a small, we always say, even if you're small as a date, you can still share that date with somebody else. So that essence of always caring for others, because you know what it's like to be in a position where you're less fortunate. And I always was told to be that helping hand, because you never know when you're the person that's going to need that helping hand. So it's really like it all goes back to my childhood and how I was raised. And for me, it was only normal to care about who was next to me. And I didn't look at any skin color or social class, because I had rich kids at school and they were unhappy as hell because they didn't feel like they belonged somewhere. Sometimes you just need a friend. So it doesn't really matter to that essence of who you are and who that person next to you is. I think we all have that, I always call it geographical luck, to be born here.
And geographical? Let's take that in. Geographically luck.
Yeah.
Geographical luck.
I coined that term. I
right.
said, yeah.
Right. You yeah. should. You yeah. should. Wow. Yeah. It's true. It's yeah. on point, to the point.
That's it. That's
it's where
it.
We
it's
are born.
Geographical luck that you're born yeah. here, not somewhere else. I think like your story is a very inspiring story that really fits that term as well, is that you're just lucky to be born somewhere specifically or being taken care of by a certain family, not somewhere else. There's no big difference between you and somebody else. I think sometimes we make up in our minds that we have certain Western standards that we think, oh, now we're better off. And I think most people that I meet in the West aren't that happy with themselves. And the happiest faces I've seen are in the Global South. But at the end of the day, there's a certain part of geographical luck that you have to recognize, that you don't have the same financial means. You don't have the same safety and stability to set up your future. So I was very aware of that at a young age. And I think luck is the only thing that you can divide and multiply. So it's the only thing that you can share that becomes more. So isn't it all up to us to use that luck that we have to then give it on to the next person? It doesn't diminish yours. It only increases it.
I think we have to repeat that one. This is really luck. You can repeat and multiply.
Yeah.
That's
you can also divide it.
I love that yeah. equation. We yeah. should make an equation about yeah. it. Because
all mathematicians that are going to lose their mind. They're like, what? You can divide this and you can multiply it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
It's the only thing you can divide and it becomes more.
Mm.
I never in one moment in my life where I shared my luck with somebody else or my happiness and it diminished my own. Never.
No.
It always increased.
It's about right? sharing. That's about sharing. Yeah. Right? And the people who are working for you, with you, and on this mission.
Yeah.
As far as my information, and of course also in our pre-conversation, people with a refugee background.
Predominantly.
Yeah. And tell us more. Tell us more.
So the funny story is that I did a lot of volunteer work as a kid. Also, as a teenager and growing up, and while I was studying, I was doing a lot of volunteer work with Amnesty International, a lot of local organizations that did a lot of things for former refugees and current refugees, and it was always centered around food, so we're always cooking. And mind you, at some point, I was like, aren't we doing this for the last 20 years in the Netherlands? Like, we welcome people because we like the food. We're like, oh, I kind of don't want you in my country, but I like, you know, foreign food. So that's why you can stay. So at some point that was, it sounds very stigmatized and very like basic how I mentioned this, but that's sometimes that's the feeling that you get, right? So at some point we were always cooking with people and I was doing volunteer work and I was just very innocently asking these people, do you actually like this? So, yeah, I'm super grateful to be here. So, no, it's not the question I asked you. Do you like what we're doing? I'm like, well, yeah, but I think it's a waste of my talent because actually I'm an accountant. I'm actually an engineer. I'm a doctor. I have my degrees, but they're not recognized by the Western standard. And at the same time, this is back like a year before COVID, I was studying my bachelor's degree at Erasmus University, which is called International Management of Social Challenges. Mouthful to just say public administration, but very focused on all these challenges.
It sounds posh.
It sounds posh. Very posh, but it's not. No, but there on an academic level and really on a policy level, I learned what the regulations were that we as a society decided to put on when it comes to refugees entering the European Union. Mm-hmm. So on an academic level and policy level, I learned that more than 9% of the people back in 2020 were only able to find a job after 2 years based on their degree. And we're talking about high-skilled people. People don't really realize that when we talk about former refugees, especially from the area of Syria, for example, mm-hmm. they are often the rich people that left the country. First of all, it takes you thousands of euros to come here. So you don't do that when you're poor. They're highly educated and they're highly skilled, but then we have to deal with different laws that really puts them out of work and also have to deal with like a colonizing framework where we don't recognize degrees as high as we do them towards Western standards because they're in Arabic or they're from a different country. And it actually didn't make sense to me. Not at all, actually, because the most intelligent people that I've met were from overseas. So at some point I was just Googling if it wasn't allowed for me to hire people based on their degrees from another country. Well, there wasn't a law that said so explicitly. Maybe there's one now, but I don't think so. And then I thought, what's stopping me to not like create a business and hire them actually? And then the ironic part is that I actually founded a food business because I've always worked in the food sector. Ever since I was 14, I've always worked. I have a very high work ethic. I love hustling for my money to a certain degree, don't get me wrong. but I was always working in kitchens and whatever. So I realized that food really connects and I always brought my own lunches to university. And mind you, Dutch students are very deprived of good food. So whenever they eat like a snack sandwich or whatever, they're already happy, ordered noodles. But it's not beneficial for you. And I was in an international setting. So a lot of my fellow students, when they saw me opening up my lunchbox, they said, wow, that looks amazing. It looks like warm food. It reminds me of my home. We were studying with so many different cultures. They said, well, what if I pay you and you make one for me as well? I thought, oh, wait, there is something in there. But I don't want it to just make money and make profit for something that I can also make an impact with. And that's why I started thinking, okay, how can I combine the different things? And that's how I really interacted with the former refugee group and thinking, well, what is more iconic and ironic than working with food and not putting former refugees in the kitchen unless they have the ambition to become a chef? So actually, this is the first year, this time, 2024 is the first time that we actually hired a Syrian chef who actually had 20 years of experience, who wants to start his own restaurant at some point. So it's super funny how that all went. And most people work in the back office based on the degree that they have. So if you're an accountant in Syria, you're an accountant with us. We just help you level up your skills to the Dutch labor market and help you with language proficiency. So, yeah.
Wow. This is amazing. And what I hear underneath... Mm. And what is palpable for me, but I think also for the listeners, is your inner drive. You're so passionate and driven. Your drivenness is showing through all your words. It's palpable for me, at least. And it's a sort of inner rebel, a sort of yeah. rebel with a cause, right?
I love that term.
Yeah, it's a rebel. Yeah, it's beautiful because it's controversial. It's really you're fighting for it. It's fueling you.
Mm, that's true.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you.
And when we had the pre-conversation, we also talked about still younger age, so 19. But let's go a little bit further back.
Yeah.
What happened around group seven? Because there's something ignited.
Pivotal moments. Yeah.
Yeah.
So mind you that I was always brought up with the essence of caring for others. And I think I was maybe 11 or 12 back then. And at the school, so it was middle school back then, they wanted to host a fairy. They do that every year, and the money that they raise, it goes either through a charity or to the school. And at some point I was thinking, back then you had Kids Edition for UNICEF, which we call Kids United. Yep. And they were raising funds for the water drought in Sudan. And I thought, why not like do that? And I just went up, little old me, to the director of the school, and I said, can we raise the money for that cause? And they said, yes, love that idea. And then UNICEF came by. I actually found the picture the other week, which is so funny because I looked very tired at that point. I was like, girl, you don't know what's ahead of you. It's no reason for you to be tired. But it was amazing. We raised a small amount of like 2,000, but for me as a kid, that was insane.
Wow.
It was insane. It wasn't me. It was just my idea to raise those funds for that part of the school. But it was the whole school that really came together. And that also taught me that sometimes it just takes one person that is willing to cross that bridge and just ask or to just take action. You don't have to do all the actions by yourself, because I didn't raise that money by myself. The whole school did, and all the parents did that were involved. But it took somebody to walk up there and ask that question. And that was a valuable moment for me. And that's where I look back at 19. It's what I look back at right now at 29. And I think that's been such a pivotal moment for me in my life.
I think that is this podcast is about sparking agency in each and every one of us. If there is one spark of agency, what really helped you putting yourself on the path where you are now, I think this is a really crucial moment, right?
You want to know something funny about that, actually?
No.
I was very shy as a kid. Up until 17, nobody believes me because I talk like I'm like Busta Rhymes rapping. But I was very shy. I didn't talk much. So that took a lot of courage for me to go to the director and ask that. And it's funny because you're looking at me like in disbelief for the listeners. Yeah. I don't see your face. My mom always says, I think you're making up for the lost time by talking so much right now.
Yeah, or it, you were already from birth on, you were an extrovert, but you kept it.
I'm quite an ambivert, actually, so I like
an
adapt
ambivert.
To situations. Yeah. But no, but it's good for people to hear this because despite my shyness, I still knew that there was something that I wanted to do, and I didn't let that defy my purpose. Like, I struggled maybe with like finding my courage to ask the director. And it's very simple, but I still find myself able to do that even at that young age. So that means that even then, I didn't let that stop me to do something good. So we have these different doubts, and I think as a kid, we are very carefree. We want to do things, and then as we grow up, we become more fearful of life, and we have things that hold us back, mostly our own thoughts, mostly the judgment that we think that we receive of society. And I think the true journey, if I look back from that young age up until now, is to free yourself from those fears and really embrace them. There's nothing wrong with fears, but you should recognize them and embrace them and actually think, okay, this is where I'm fearful for. Why is that? Where is that stemming from? Is it something from my inner child? Is it something that society taught me to be scared of? And then actually just basically say, F it, and still go for it. And I think that's the most powerful thing, to look fear in the eyes, whether you're that 11-year-old kid or right now 30 or 40-year-old person. I think that's the essence of it. And also, I don't want people that are listening to this thinking that it's such an amazing story that you were 11, you were raising money. I think it's great for me to share this story, but it doesn't have to be that big.
No.
I think we all have something when you go back to your childhood, something that your inner child was either passionate for. And I feel like I always tell people, if you can't find something that you're passionate for when you're looking for your mission, what frustrates you? What makes you angry? Because then the opposite of that is what your passion is. So for me, injustice really frustrates me.
I see. It's a pity that we can't show your face right now, because it's amazing how fast your whole, the way you look to me changed in a split second when we're talking about injustice.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're on something here.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
We can little bit deep dive into it, because
sure,
there is something happening with you, and I really would love to share that with the audience. Injustice, yeah. What does it do with you?
I think injustice to me is
maybe
the only
also
thing.
And maybe also what you mean about injustice.
Yeah.
For you.
So injustice is just the unfair treatment of people in general sense, and of animals and the well-being of the planet. And what it does to me is, I never want to be in a situation where I feel helpless. I don't want to feel helpless and being unable to help myself or another person. And I think in life, there's this author. His name is Donald Miller. He's a great podcast as well. And he wrote a book called Hero on a Mission. And he made a great distinction. Sometimes bad things in life happen to you. But if you look at the film script, you have two characters, right? To both characters, bad things happen. We think of Lion King, for example. But here's a defining thing. Bad things happen to us in life. But it's up to you to make that decision, because the hero decides and says, well, this has happened to me, so now I'm going to fight my way for it not to happen to anybody else again. And then the villain says, it has happened to me, so I'm going to take revenge on the whole world because it happened to me. And if we look at the current state of the world, we see a lot of these heroes and villains. But it's all up to you to look inwards and see, okay, what can I do to that? And that's what injustice means to me, is to constantly take that decision every day. Am I deciding to be a hero or a villain?
Wow.
Yeah, and I don't believe in a victim mindset. Sometimes things happen to you.
Yeah.
And the situation that you're in at that moment is not your fault. If somebody wrongs you, that's not your fault. But what you do with the situation afterwards, that's always what my mom taught me. That's in your control. So are you going to use that to be quiet in the corner and start crying? Or are you going to use that injustice that happened to you to empower other people?
What beautiful. What helps you at a certain crossroad when you feel? It's all about feeling also, right?
Yeah,
it comes from deep definitely. From within. And although you feel challenged in some certain point, what helps you to prevent to fall in the trap, to become the villain, and you choose the hero path? What can you describe what helps you?
A lot of things, actually. It's very layered. The biggest reason is my mom and the way she raised us. So I have three other sisters, so we're four girls. And she always taught us to move forward. And I think if people remember like the message of, I think Denzel Washington had a great speech on that, is if you fall, fall forward. So always move forward and move with grace, but also be sure that you can change something in your life. And I don't like to be in a position of frustration. So I always turn frustration into passion. It's also my story with Fresh Table. I was very frustrated a bit with how the world was dealing with social situations, such as dealing with refugees and calling it a refugee problem or a refugee crisis, which is outrageous, because what entails a crisis? Don't we just have like a policy crisis or politic crisis, whatever? But also when it came to sustainability, I didn't understand that back then I was studying and I had a group of students. This is a very specific situation, and they were very passionate about the climate. So at some point they were crying about the melting ice tops, and I completely get it because I really care about the world as well. But then a week later we were discussing in class, I don't know if you remember this, but it was this Syrian boy with a red t-shirt and the blue pants who was washed up on the shore in Greece, and they were literally shrugging. They couldn't care less. And to me, that didn't click. I was thinking, how can you cry about the melting ice tops, but you don't care about a kid because maybe he's of a brown color or it feels like a far from your best show while like Greece is like 2 hours of flying from here? And that didn't really sit well with me, but I'm not the person to sit in frustration. It's also, if my sisters would describe me like in arguments, because of course you have sisters, there's mm-hmm. always arguments. Mm-hmm. I was always a diplomat, and they call me that because I easily forgive. And then I move on. And people sometimes mistake that in life with a weakness or that you have a soft spot for people. But it's not the reason. I always forgive because I love mental clarity and I love peace in my mind, in my heart. And to me, happiness is peace and quietness in that sense. So for me, it meant that at that point, I felt frustrated. I thought, okay, I need to do something. And that eventually led to my entrepreneurship. But to go back to your question about what really led that passion to fight injustice, it's just being aware of the powers that we have. Even if you're a small person, you're not a small person. Everything happens in your mind. Like, who told you that you're not able to change? It always takes one person. I always love this quote where they say, but what can I do? Said 7 billion people. You know, it only takes one to say, yes, I can do something. And then at some point you start this movement and this change. And what I realized at some point is that I didn't have to have any kind of superpower. I think I realized that my simple ability to just do things. Like for me, it never occurred to me that I wasn't able to do things. I think my mom really spoke life into us as kids and really always encouraged us that you're able to do anything. You're here in the Netherlands. You have a geographical luck. Do something with it. So I went on. I did my education. I worked really hard next to my studies. So I founded my business in my second year of my bachelor's while doing my university studies full time, while doing my master's afterwards full time as well, working part time next to it, having two jobs, starting the business, still doing a lot of volunteer work and traveling. And it was all possible because in my mind, there was nothing that I couldn't do. And at some point, that mission became so much bigger than I am. And I thought, if I want to fight this injustice, I have to, there's no room for me to doubt myself because it's bigger than I am. So my success is dependent. So, well, more in a way of what I can do for other people is dependent on my own success. So the more I invest in myself, the more I excel in the things that I want to achieve, the more I can help other people. So it's always intertwined. It's a very long answer, but yeah.
Beautiful answer. And it comes from within. So it's the best. Yeah. Then it's the best answer there is.
Yeah.
It's your answer. So, and I think it will resonate and it will, yeah, it will resonate with the audience on a deep level. And what I find very interesting is also the importance of your mother. Mm. You mentioned her now twice or for the third time.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say, conclude that she is one of your role models?
100%.
Yeah?
Yeah, she was my first role model and she will always be that. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So when she listened to that, what do you want to say to her?
Hi. No, I want to acknowledge her because I think often this goes for a lot of parents actually, and maybe this resonates with you as well as a dad. I think sometimes you don't realize what kind of impact you have on your kids. You try your best and sometimes you doubt yourself. Am I doing enough? Am I not working too hard? Because I want to work hard and give them the best life. But at the same time, I want to be a present parent. And sometimes parents, they grow older and they have the fear of their kids being resentful for a lost time or maybe the wrong education. But I want my mom to always remember and know that I'm the most grateful for every decision that she has made. Even when sometimes as a teenager, I didn't understand, but I'm still very grateful.
You didn't want to understand. As a cause,
I wasn't that
as
bad
a rebel,
as a teenager.
As a rebel with a cause.
Actually, the funny thing is my rebellious part just started like later on.
Oh,
thank God.
Okay. When your prefrontal cortex came online,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Somewhere in
2 months ago, yeah. No, but that's the message that I want her to know, but I think also for every parent is sometimes you don't realize like how impactful your words are, but also in the positive sense.
Well, I think she will appreciate it.
I hope so.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And is this the first time that you say that, or do you say that often?
I try to word that more often in person, but it's the first time live on a podcast. Yeah.
Oh, great.
So now she has this recorded. She can play it every
day. Yeah. Now, the reason also why I asked is that Karim was in the previous episode. He was last week at the TechTogether.ai event, and they got a question on stage, and it really, the question I couldn't film because, I sat there in the audience, but the question was, what did your mother teach and tell you?
Mm.
And Karim answered without even really thinking about it. She taught me I can be whoever I want to be.
Yeah.
And then a very beautiful answer to back that short answer up. But it was really beautiful. And I hear that in the same kind of different words, yeah. I hear the same kind of message.
Definitely.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And also mental clarity. Mm. That's an important topic for you. How do you do that? Because you are so busy. I hear a lot of doing. Mm-hmm. And on the 10th of October this week, while we're recording, so we will publish it on the 16th, but a recording is coming Thursday. It's the Mental Health Day.
Yeah.
And Awareness Day. And so it's all about mental health, mental clarity. What do you do in all the doing to keep mental clarity? Because that's interesting. It's almost like a contra, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's you're doing so much. You're busy. What do you need to keep mental clarity?
So it starts with multiple things. First of all, I have a to-do list, and that's for the entrepreneurial part, and I have a to-be list.
Ooh.
So the to-be list is just focusing on me. And I think, like, for the past maybe 10, 12 years, I've been really, like, on a journey to really find myself in different ways. And that also goes to your mental clarity and your mental health in general. So I think for one person, that can be in a form of therapy. For the other person, that can, for example, for me, that was traveling. So I traveled a lot, and did a lot of solo traveling, and that really makes you get to know yourself. But I didn't just travel and wander with backpacking. I was really asking myself tough questions and asking me, why am I here? What is my purpose in life? Why do I deal with certain situations in a certain way? Who am I exactly? And I think mental health and that whole journey, it's not a finished stage.
Never.
Never. It's a continuous process. So the funny thing is, I always, while traveling, I had a little journal, and I have one each year that I buy, and I write down every location that I'm at, and then I'm just like writing down all my thoughts at that moment. I do that for the highs in my life. I do that for the lows. I do that for the middle moments. And it's so funny because I think 2 months ago, I found one of those old journals, and I saw one of the, I think I was in Brazil somewhere on the beach, and then I saw the things that I was worried about back then. I wasn't too sure like what to choose, like when it comes to my academic experience, because I studied IBA before that, so very business oriented, but I was missing that part of making an impact. It didn't make sense to me to just calculate profit and then what to do after. So for me to be very worried about that, and then to realize afterwards, like, the decisions that I made after that and how well I turned out, like, in that essence with academic level, it's so funny and it's so great to write that down. I think it's so important. Like, if I can give one tip to people, is to write everything down, because that means that you get to recognize the highs even more. You can also get to celebrate the lows that you came from. And it really puts things into perspective, thinking, wow, I myself, and God, if you believe in God, got myself out of these situations and these struggles. So why can't I be able to deal with this or that? And to really put things into perspective and what it is. And I think when it comes to mental health and making space for it, I think especially for entrepreneurs, it's so important, because if there's no you, there's no business. You are the, especially when it comes to social enterprise, you are the person behind it. And at some point, nobody cares about your business if you're dead, like, and what are you going to leave behind? So for me, I realized what I was doing wrong. So everything else, remind you that I was 25 at the time, full-time studying, working, doing a lot of volunteer work. You're still a sister, a friend, a daughter. You're doing so much at the same time. So how are you going to be stable? So I realized, if I don't watch out, I'm always the one that I put last. So I put everybody else first. And at the end of the night, I would like still put like my workout like at like 10 p.m. as if that was feasible, but I had to get up at 5. So at some point, I was thinking, what if I don't only figuratively, but also literally put myself first? So that's when I started getting up always at like 4:30, 5 a.m. And the mornings are reserved for me.
The 5 a.m. club.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's, but mine is a little bit differently orchestrated, because I'm also Muslim. So I'm very, in a spiritual sense, also made a very big journey in that. So the first morning prayer, which is the Fajr prayer, is right now the winter time. It's at 6, but sometimes it's as early as 3 or 3:30. So I wake up at that moment. I think it's beautiful, because you decide that your spiritual health and your connection with something greater is more important than your sleep. And that also taught me, if I can put that first, that means that I can also put all the other things for me first. So I get up, I pray, I have a meditation session, I write, I journal, I read. The whole morning is just for me. There's no business, there's no email, there's no WhatsApp text that gets answered. And then after 7 a.m., I'm live. But those first hours only reserved for me. And that seems like a very simple thing to do, but I really changed my mindset as well, of how sometimes you have to put yourself first in order to deal with the rest of your business. So,
and this is structural. You're doing this gradually,
yeah.
Structural,
yeah.
Each day, every day.
Yeah.
Wow. And this is almost also a sort of self-regulation in a way.
Yeah.
And what do you do when you get stuck? Because for sure, also on your side, Yasmina, I can believe there will be a lot of challenges.
100%.
Not problems, challenges. And worthy challenges. Otherwise, we ignore them, right?
Yeah, true. I think the most important thing is to recognize them and not run away from it. I think this year, for example, I had a lot of challenges, but I realized that I'm not the same person as 10 years ago. Right now, I built a very great ecosystem of great friends around me and mentors that make me feel safe enough to discuss different things, whether it's business or private, and to actually deal with things heads on. And I realized a very valuable lesson that I've been aware of for the last years, but I actually really came to realize it this year, is to be able to let go of control. So I'm a very, I wouldn't say controlling person, but I think it's inherent to be in a human being. We don't like not having control with situations.
Easier said than done. Yep. Easier said than done.
So I always said, yeah, you have to let go. You're not in control of things. You say it, but do you really, really believe it with everything in your heart?
I almost believe you.
Yeah.
Because you're very... It comes with so much clarity, and yet, how do you do it? No. I wouldn't dare. But yet,
I think you call me right now in the right moment, because I think life is all about phases. Right now, I think for the past half year, I've been in a very clear moment. I've always focused on mental clarity. That's like first of all. But second of all, really being able to let go of control. I say that right now with full conviction that I'm able to do that, because I'm also very spiritual. So I believe in God and believe in letting that control go. Because as human beings, I also think, why do we even want control? That would stress me the hell out. Because imagine that even if you don't believe in God or in the, like, for example, the universe, to really believe that everything is in your control, that means that there's also no hope. That means that when something shitty happens to you, that's all you. Like, you can't blame it to the universe and say something better is coming to me. No, it's just you. And isn't that more depressing than actually believing that you're not in control? Isn't that more hopeful? So I think everything comes to perspective and being able to let that go, but also realizing how freeing it is to really face those fears. And for me right now, I hope I can stay in this mindset forever. But I'm also aware that life is all about roller coasters. So maybe some points in life, I'm going to have a little challenge that's going to test those beliefs if I really am able to let go of that control. So I think it's just ups and downs, but to really be aware of those situations and to challenge your own perspective. So I think that's why it's really valuable to have a circle around you, an ecosystem of people that are always truthful with you, even tell you the truth when you don't like it, and that give you different perspectives or to challenge you. And read a lot. Like, I do a lot of self-work. I read a lot of books that always challenge my mindset as well.
Beautiful. Can you mention one book which is really, is or was very helpful?
Definitely.
Pinpoint the moment that it was very helpful.
I think the most recent one that I read was the How to Meet Yourself workbook by Dr. LaPera. Amazing. Amazing. I would recommend that to everyone.
We will put it in the notes.
Yeah, do it. And she also has a few podcasts. So if you're not a big reader, do that. But it's a workbook that really gets you to everything. So there is ego work, there's shadow work, there's thinking about, am I reacting from my ego or from my ratios or from the mind? Does this make any sense for me to take everything? Like, for example, there's people when you don't reply for a few days, even if it's business-wise, I'm talking about emails or phone calls, they take that personal. Oh, they don't want to do business with me. They didn't like my pitch or whatever. And I'm always like, right now, thanks to the book as well, I'm just thinking, it doesn't have anything to do with me. I think people really overplay their roles in other people's minds. And that sounds very harsh to her, because you're like, oh, they don't care about me. It's not that people don't care about you, but people most of the time, the ego is not a negative thing, but the ego consumes us. So 99% of the time, we're very busy with ourselves. And even when we're thinking about other people, we think of how they perceive us, you know? But at some point, you have to realize they might not be thinking about us at all. And that also puts actions into perspective when people take certain decisions. And I think this is really valuable as when it comes to doing business. You cannot take everything personal.
Yep. Agree.
Yeah.
Agree.
I'm going to end it with that.
Yeah, agree. One thing about control, just to step back, one thing about control. What I am starting to believe and also starting to embrace and accept, well, acceptance is maybe next stage in my process, mm-hmm. is when it comes to control, the only thing we have in control is accepting that we're not in control at all.
That's true.
I think I really believe that.
Yeah.
I really believe that. I really start believing it and also embracing it, because we tend to control everything what's outside of our control, and we lose control on the one thing we can control, mm-hmm. or start focusing on is the self, yeah. we as yeah. a person. Where am I standing? What's my opinion?
100%.
Instead yeah. of being worried when it comes to Jay Shetty. Jay Shetty, a well-known podcaster, and I love this one, OEO, obligations, yeah. expectations, and opinions. Yeah. And we care so much about all those outside of us, but what do we think?
Yeah.
What do we want?
I think in Arabic they have a very beautiful saying which says, tie your camel and then leave it to God, which means you do the work in life. So, for example, you want a job real hard and real bad, so you work real hard to get it. At some point, you have your job application process, you have the interview, then it's out of your hands. There's no need for you to stalk the people on LinkedIn or like go drive by their houses. It's out of your control. So I think out of your control needs a little terms and conditions, because you have to do the work, and then you have to believe that you did the work, and all the rest is not in your control. So I think that's the most important thing. I think what you mentioned is also important about outside influences. There's one thing that you can't control, and especially I always give this advice to friends when they're talking about discussions that they have with their loved ones or their partners, and say, you can't control somebody else's reaction, but you can control your reaction to their reaction.
Yes.
And that's the most powerful thing that you can do.
True. Amen.
Yeah.
yeah.
Preach to the Torah.
Yeah. Hey, and mission driven. And also there are three values which are most important for mm-hmm. you when driving your company or maybe even in life.
Yeah.
Well, what are those three values?
So within Fresh Table, we have three core values.
Yes.
Which is social inclusivity, the part with the former refugees, but yes. also a bit broader than that, food accessibility, and sustainability. And I put them as core values on purpose, because we see so many corporates that after 80 or 90 years existence, they decide they need a little diversity and inclusion department and try to change a whole culture that's been around in the company for 90 years by implementing a little department that you give little to no authority to actually implement things. And people are, when it comes to, I also did my master's in change management, when it comes to people being willing to change, and then also on this topic, it's going to take you a long time. So I thought, as all startups, and I think also for listeners that maybe want to start their business or are in that phase of even a skill up, you have the power to make sure that these themes are not options anymore, but they're core values. I put them as core values on purpose because they're also centered around in my life, but it also makes it mandatory for me that every decision that we take has to pass through those three core values. If it doesn't align with one of them, it's out. And I also did that as a sense of protecting myself, because I'm so interested in multiple things. Like, I can talk about science one day, and then we're talking about like fashion and farming the other day. So I really put them in there as well to really make sure that we capture the essence of it and don't like go out of the box too much. Mm-hmm. And these are already broad topics. But also another important reason why I did this is because I don't believe that all these three things should be seen as separate. And the major two of those are social inclusivity and sustainability. And I hate how we as a society made those two things very distinct from each other. While to me, there's no sustainability without social justice. And there's no social justice without sustainability. They all go hand in hand. And we should actually call it more eco-justice than just sustainability. But when we think about refugees coming here, a lot of the time, it's also people that are climate refugees, because we are making expansive use of their resources when it comes to oil, and that also leads to wars, and then people have to flee their homes. And I think that has so much to do with each other, that we really got distracted by the Western, predominantly like male and white experts that we always see talking about sustainability, that we became so distant from what it is in essence. And I'm super blessed with the people that I've met within the company, within Fresh Table, and the people that I've had from the start, is that we had so many different interesting conversations about how do we define these terms, each and one of us, because we're all coming from different backgrounds and cultures. So we have a conversation with somebody from Ghana or somebody from Poland and Syria. And when you mention sustainability, they all look at you like,
say what?
What is that? Like, who cares about that? But when we talk, when I give like examples and we talk about the essence of what sustainability means, they're like, oh, that, we've been doing that for years, you know? It's more than normal. And I think this is a very important point that I want to make, is that the narrative of who we call experts has been so controlled because people sometimes, I want to be very respectful by saying this, but sometimes they have too much time in their hands to be discussing things instead of doing things. And I think, especially here in the West, and I can say that because I'm very grateful for the amount of awards that we've gotten and the recognition. But sometimes I think there's too much focus. Like, isn't it weird? I started realizing, isn't it weird that we have to celebrate somebody being very sustainable or being very impactful and caring about other people? Because when you look at the Global South, it's more than normal to do that. So at some point I was in an event and I got the question from somebody in the audience who said, well, isn't it like we try to reach like more people of color and migrant people that have a business here in the Netherlands and we want them to make more impact because we don't see it. I said, well, if you don't see something, doesn't it mean that something's wrong with your vision, right? Doesn't mean that something's not there. It means that you need glasses because it's actually there. But it's because, right, yeah, I'm very like direct like that.
This is the rebel. This is the rebel.
It was an important message because what is impact? What is sustainability? And this goes to terms even further than that because when we think of the South African term of Ubuntu, it means like to care like for another, right? And it's very community driven. It's more than normal to take care of your people. When we think of, we put labels of vegan cuisine here on everything left and right. Even on water, you would see like labels of vegan. But if we look at the Indian cuisine or Ghanaian, there's so many dishes. Even when I talk to my mom and she would make something, I would say, oh, that's vegan. She'd look at me like crazy. What are you talking about? But in the essence, that's vegan. But we coined that term and we made it so westernized that we actually alienated the people who were the founding fathers and mothers of what veganism, sustainability means and justice means around the world. But because we made ourselves such experts in the West, we actually excluded them from the discussion. But they were the founding fathers of everything that we have. It's the same thing when it comes to spices, right? I think a lot of Western countries colonized the whole world in search of spices and they end up not using it. But the funny thing is, after that, it's not that they don't use it. They sell it back to the people, the diaspora that live here, for a higher price. So the whole full circle comes back. And I think the most important thing to me is what I learned and a message that I really, really feel the need of spreading. And I'm sorry I'm taking your podcast and doing that. But I think it's a little bit more broader than that, is that at some point I realized we're getting awarded for certain things that... Why are we getting rewarded? Why do we have awards saying the most sustainable business in the Netherlands? Or because we won a lot of those. Like I'm in the top 100 of most sustainable food changers and this and that. And there's multiple of that. And then I thought because we made it so abnormal to care for one another that we have to make awards for it. And to anybody listening that's now nominating us, I'm super grateful. Like keep doing that. Don't get me wrong. But it helps with the recognition of what we're doing in the movement. But I think in essence, isn't it absurd that we have to reward that from happening? Isn't it more than normal for people, for example, in the Global South, that they don't get rewarded because they're more action taking? So that here's a difference that I want to make, is that some people here, we're so stuck in the expert discussion, we're talking about a lot of things, but then there's people that take actionable steps, they're actually making change, they actually care for another. I think we're here based in Rotterdam with the business, and there is a lot of poverty in the surrounding areas, but there's a lot of entrepreneurs there that take a lot of action. So, for example, the bakery around the corner, they use the rest of their breads and they give it to poor people. Mm. But you would never see them talk about that because to them, it's more than normal. And I think here what happens is when you sometimes lack the vocabulary or you lack the skills to translate what you're doing in words, and I'm also aware of that, despite me being a woman of color and being Muslim, I also have the advantage of being educated and having a university degree. So I'm able to talk. I talk a lot, but I'm able to talk my way into certain rooms. So I'm also able of me having that skill and that actual like positive advantage to use that in advantage for other people as well. So I try to invite them with me. So for example, this year we organized the first Impact Gala of the Benelux, which is amazing. It was a very like fundraiser theme, but I'm not going to get into it too much. But what we made sure of doing was that half of it were corporates and government institutions that came up, and they were also indirectly sponsoring the seats of local social impact makers in the neighborhood that weren't even aware that they were social entrepreneurs, because to them, it's more than normal. So here is what's important. It becomes about visibility and celebrating other people and also recognizing, and I want everybody that listens to this that is aware of them being able to at some point entering certain rooms. I'm very aware of that. The way that I can talk or enter somewhere is because of certain educational levels. I should also be able to open that door and then leave it open and bring the rest in there.
Is this maybe a next ambition? A sort of next ambition or ambition besides or ambition with Fresh Table? Or there is the cause, the rebel with a cause. And also
she came out there,
systemic change.
Yeah, definitely.
Systemic change. What's next?
Yeah, I think it's last year in 2023, we launched the foundation. Because with Fresh Table, we also have the Share Mew campaign. That's the last pillar of food accessibility, which means that you as a customer can buy a meal for somebody else in need. We started that during COVID when we made zero sales and we actually saw the need for a lot of elder people that were in isolation to give them meals, but we weren't selling anything. So then we thought, why not make sure that we form that bridge? Because a lot of people wanted to do something, they didn't know how to. And then I thought, oh wait, that's my superpower, to connect people and take intangible actions. So that's how we started with 300 free meals. And this year the goal was 10,000 free meals. And we're going to reach that. So I'm super excited about that. And we've been able to do that. And going back to what I said about the hero story, like choosing to be a hero or villain, right now, the role of Fresh Table has never been to be seen as a hero. It's not my own purpose even. Like, I don't want to be seen as much like that.
No, you said that in the conversation we had before. It's not your baby, it's a mission.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about me, not at all. Actually, up until 2 years ago, you couldn't find me online. Like, I hated being visible. But now I really, like, found the way to understand that I need to share that story. But the hero is not us. The hero is you. Mm. The hero is a client that we are just Aladdin's carpet, you know? Like, we are able to drive you to that stage because we have the connections. We facilitate the network. We facilitate the food. And we have a big network of, we work a lot with deprived communities, whether that be here in the Netherlands, so the homeless shelters, etc., or overseas. So we had projects in Lebanon with former refugee camps, but also in Colombia, where we work with the deprived youth. And so that's how Share a Meal came about, reaching 10,000 soon. And to answer your question, the second pillar of the foundation is to also give back that mindset that I was just talking about of opening the doors for the next generation specifically. I look back at me being 11 years old, and I think at some point I would have wished that I had some examples around me. I had a great example for a mom, for example. So when it comes to different life skills and sets and morals and values.
As a role model.
Definitely. Yeah. But as an entrepreneur, and specifically social entrepreneur, there was nobody that I could look up to in my internal circle, and especially not people of color, especially not. So whenever I would try and find a mentor, it would always either be around profit or something else, and it was never really centered around that. And I thought, how can we? I'm still young, but I still thought about the next generation that's coming up, and I think they have the keys to form a change. So how can we give that mindset back? And that's how we started with the Social Young Entrepreneurship Bootcamp. So we're actually educating and helping younger kids form their own social enterprise, because then we can also see a bigger impact on their community. So because of them becoming entrepreneurs, but not just entrepreneurs, but social entrepreneurs, they actually help their whole community thrive. So it's not just advancing.
And then we come back to you are doing so much, many things.
How do you do it?
Yeah. No. My question to you is, if and how and where do you need help?
I think I'm always open to new conversations that help us get to certain goals. So we're close to reaching 10,000 meals, for example. We try to double that by next year.
No, you're going to double that and crunch that number, right?
100%.
All right, 100%.
Manifestation, yeah. But the nice thing is that, so the foundation operates separately from the business, but a part of our profit always goes to the foundation. And it means that every single meal that you buy with us actually changes the world already, even without the foundation, because that helps us employ former refugees. It helps us make a bigger impact on the planet. And there's something that's the most amazing thing, is that something that we'll be doing always, no matter if AI is growing or there's going to be robots, we're always going to be eating. We always need food. So for the listeners that work at a company, or if you have a company and you need catering, you need a lunch, think twice of where you order it from. If you want to order it from somebody who makes delicious food, order from Fresh Table. But even if not, there's many other organizations that either focus on one of the two. So either they focus on sustainability or social inclusivity. But if you want to tackle both, then support our business, because that means that we can create more impact with you.
Here, here. I support that completely with Journeys of Empowerment. We do. And, well, we're almost heading towards the end. And I heard a lot of beautiful sparks of agency. I tend to call them sparks of agency instead of nuggets of wisdom.
I love that.
So, sparks of agency. And one question I have. You were talking about role models and talking about and creating an environment which a lot of good examples to sort of be in a cue for you to inspire you to do good. For mentors, you also mentioned mentors and people around you, your close circle.
Yeah.
How do you find people you need? How do you come to that point? How does that work?
I'm going to be honest, it was quite hard to find people, actually, because I'm very, of course, mission-driven, but also very value-based. I look at morals of people. So just another mentor that would focus on business wasn't cutting it for me. So at this point, I have a mentor who's actually based in Chicago, and he's a social entrepreneur, and he's been in business for the last, like, 40 years and so much experience. And it was just a Google search. I just kept searching. That's how I found it. But then also I want people to challenge themselves of how they think of mentors, because sometimes mentors are not people that you speak to repeatedly. So for me, a lot of mentorships that I had in life, I met while traveling. So it was a random conversation with a bus driver that really gave me new perspective to something. It was a random conversation that I had at work with a former employee. So I think mentors don't have to be people that are further ahead in your life or in the same sector. It needs to be people that can teach you tangible things. But in order for you to receive that, you need to be ready. Need to be open. You need to be open to have conversations with different people and be willing to express that even when they're new to you. I think there's so much power in being vulnerable and being open about what you're dealing with instead of trying to deal with everything by yourself. And I think we go back to the mental health part is really, I think there is such a profound power and strength in people that are willing to be vulnerable and open and share their story, that it really, you probably know that, like when you share your story, you get so many reactions of people being like, oh, actually, you might not know this, but I also dealt with the same thing. And they kept quiet for years and years. But because you were able to share that story, someone else shares it with you. And the second part of it, be a mentor. So in order to receive, you also have to give. And once you recognize that, the more knowledge you also have to give, the more you recognize how you can get that out of other people. We have to do this together. So it's all back to the Ubuntu and community driven, give out to receive as well.
It does a lot. It takes a lot to get me quiet, right? Wow.
I hope in a good way.
Yes, yeah, of course, of course. I was already impressed while researching about your personality, about Fresh Table, about the mission you're on. And we can go on for hours. And for sure, in my hope is that this is only the first conversation we're having.
100%.
And I really have a big respect for your drivenness and also your ability to not only talk about it in a very articulated, very good way, but also your actions. You're really walking the talk. You're really walking the talk in everything what you do. So a big applause for you, and thank you for sharing so much. And there are some books mentioned, journaling you've mentioned, mentors, mental clarity, frustration, turning frustration into passion. That's very powerful. I want to, if there is one thing you would love the audience to know about you or to get out of this conversation, what do you hope for?
One thing I want people to get out of this conversation is, first of all, find your mission. It's already within you. Don't go searching outside for it. Second of all, take action. It's not as scary as it seems. You just have to do it. Send that LinkedIn message to that person you look up to. nominate yourself for a certain award, you just get into certain rooms and take action and get at it and just grab life by the balls.
This is what Journeys of Empowerment is all about. Thank you very much, Yasmina. I'm looking so much forward to keep in touch, follow you, and who are wanting to reach out to you, where can they find you?
They can find me personally on LinkedIn. Just search for Yasmina at Fresh Table or reach out to freshtable.nl. And we're based in Rotterdam, so if you ever want to lunch or come by, just have a conversation. Knock on the door.
Be careful what you wish for. Thank you.